In the shadow of the Tennessee Smoky Mountains sits a patch of land locals call Gibson Holler, a quiet, working-class stretch of Sevier County where folks keep to themselves. But in February of 1992, a mystery unfolded that shook the rural county to its core. A young man named Tommy Griffin was bailed out by his friends and then vanished. The next day, his sister Connie went out looking for him, and she vanished too. What happened in those hours between when Tommy left Howie's hideaway and Connie going out and looking for him? This is the story of Tommy Griffin and Connie Branham. Everybody, I'm trying something different today, so I'm going to try to do a better story mode. Because I noticed my brain is all over the place, and I want my stories to be easier to follow. Maybe that's why this isn't growing the way I'd like it to, and honestly, I don't expect it to get, like, super huge. I'd like it to, but I'm just trying to improve. So if this is better, please let me know. But okay, so what I'm doing is I'm still working on my nostalgic piece. I'm working on the hair, and move this closer. There it is. I don't know if you can see all this. I don't really care at this point. I had to like mark where the part is because I've never done hair this way where it actually, you know, like kind of like mine, except this is more back here and that's more back there. So this is going to be a fun like new thing for me. So wish me luck. So I started next to where the part's going to be. That way I can start decreasing this way and decreasing this way. This decrease will be more severe than this decrease to like really drag that back.
Oops.
Come on, Shelby.
God damn it, Dusty.
Oh, Shelby. You ever see that movie, Just Friends? God damn it, Dusty. Dusty. I love that damn movie. That is my Christmas movie. Just Friends. Oh, so hilarious. That's a word. So hilarious. All right. I just realized he's going to be reading off like my notes and doing this. So wish me luck. This might go terribly now that I think about how like one eye has to go this way, one eye has to go that way. February 21st of 1992. It's about 4 in the afternoon when a Camaro grows into a gravel lot belonging to Howie's Hideaway. A small, dimly lit bar, like a little local watering hole on the outskirts of Maryville, Tennessee. The car holds 3 men who are almost always seen together. These men being 24-year-old Tommy Griffin, James Dellinger, and Gary Sutton, who is also Dellinger's nephew. People at the bar know this trio very well. James Dellinger is the intimidator, throws his weight around. Gary Sutton, again, is his nephew and loyal shadow. And then there's Tommy Griffin. Tommy is the quieter of the three, sometimes trouble prone, but generally keeps to himself. That night, the men drank heavily. Shopwell argued off and on. Witnesses later remembered that there did seem to be tension between the three, something lying underneath the surface. Ugh, yarn vomit. Ugh. At one point, a scuffle broke out between the trio and 2 other regulars. These men known as, and I'm not kidding here, known as Chief and Cowboy. Interesting. I also never found the real names, just Chief and Cowboy. Like, okay. I have a lot of questions about those names, really, because I don't know. Chief, I can't understand. Cowboy, it's a little unoriginal, but I digress. But this scuffle fizzled out quickly. No punches were really thrown, no harm was done. The bartender does ask them to leave after this scuffle. And the night winds down. Later that night, Tommy Griffin's family received a phone call. Tommy Griffin's trailer was on fire, engulfed deeply in flames. Later, once the fire was out, they're able to search the rubble. They find nobody inside. There's no body to be recovered. This follows with relief as well as dread. Where was Tommy then? And the answer came from an unlikely place. Tommy was in Blount County Jail. He had been picked up for public intoxication. And this was just a wave of relief for Tommy's family. And they ask his good friends, James Dellinger and Gary Sutton, who came after hearing about the trailer being on fire. And they ask his friends to please go bail him out and bring him home. And they did. Later, we'll find out that Tommy Griffin was bailed out at 11:30 that night. So this whole fire and everything happened pretty early. All of this occurred pretty early. But the next morning, Tommy's family realizes that Tommy still isn't home. Panic begins to set in. The first people that the family asks, obviously, is James and Gary. And they tell them that once they bailed out Tommy, that there was a woman there waiting for him that he had met at the bar earlier that day, that they did not know her name, and that he left with her. The thing is, just taking off and not contacting anybody and completely disappearing and vanishing was not typical Tommy behavior. Please excuse my cat. Can you move? Connie Branham wasn't one to sit back and wait. If she didn't know where her brother was, she was going to go find him. So she grabbed a picture of her brother and went out to go ask around to see if anybody had seen him and retrace his footsteps. She spent the morning and afternoon going around Sevier County on February 22nd, asking anybody that she came across if they had seen Tommy. But hours pass, and Connie never comes home. Her disappearance is far more alarming than Tommy's, because Connie was a devoted mother of two. She would not just take off and not come home. She knew her. She had children waiting on her. So the fact that she never came back, her mother, Viola, knew something is very wrong. On February 24th, Viola Griffin reports both of her kids missing. And hearing the circumstances of one going missing and then the other going missing while they're out looking for them, police know something is very wrong and very fishy with this case. Later that same day, a father and his daughter were walking near Little River in Wallen when they spot a body down a steep ravine. There's beer cans scattered nearby, as well as bullet casings. And when police look closer, they see that this victim has a prosthetic leg, which is a clear identifier for Tommy Griffin. The autopsy will later show two gunshot wounds, one to the shoulder and one to the back of the head, both done at a point-blank range, making it very apparent that this was no accident. This was most definitely an execution. After finding this, the idea that his sister is also missing makes police more concerned for Connie Branham's well-being. The discovery of Tommy's body and knowing that his sister is missing from going out and looking for him increases the severity of this case. The police decide to question, obviously, James and Gary. And James and Gary tell the investigators the same thing that they told Tommy's family. That earlier, while they were at Howie's Hideaway, Tommy had met this dark-haired woman at the bar who they had never seen before. They didn't know her name. And that when they left the bar, Tommy actually left with the woman. And later that night, when they went to bail him out, she was there waiting for Tommy, and he left with her again. Which is kind of weird, because it's like, well, why wouldn't she bail him out, you know? Police, at the same time as they're looking for Tommy, they're asking questions about Connie as well. And they go to this little general store, and they ask the person working there, and they say that the day before, Connie was there. She was asking people if anybody had seen her brother, and two men in a white pickup truck pulled up, and she was talking to them. Connie ended up leaving, and they followed behind her. So they start kind of trying to look into this information too. 8 days after Tommy's body was found, another chilling call comes in. A father and his son have come across a burned car in a heavily wooded area. Inside this car are skeletal remains. And these remains are burned so badly that identification was a much longer process. But the investigators were already fearing who this could be, as the car was identified as Connie Branham's vehicle. Inside the remains of Connie and her vehicle, officers also find another shell casing. This time, it's a .303 cartridge from a British rifle. And just as Tommy, Connie too was executed, she was placed back into her car and set ablaze. So with this discovery of Connie, police canvass everything again. And this time they go and talk to the bartender at Howie's Hideaway. Why this wasn't done originally and right away, I do not know. I feel like that would have been the first place to go, because that's where he last was. I don't know. But I mean, they got there eventually, but... And so they talk to the bartender, and the bartender remembers this night very vividly. And she tells them what James and Gary tell them until the very end. She tells them that there was no woman with dark hair with them. Gary, James, and Tommy all left together. No woman in tow. And with this information, police begin looking for James and Gary. They go to their residences, but they're not home. But while on James Dellinger's property, and James Dellinger had quite a bit of vehicles, a bunch of like junkers and stuff like that, or just older cars, on the property, they find a white pickup that matches the description given by the store clerk. With this, police are able to obtain search warrants, especially because of the fact that they lied in their story, not just about who Tommy left at the bar, but also who Tommy left with after being bailed out. They lied twice. On James Dellinger's property, they also find a burn barrel, a spent 23-gauge cartridge that matches what was used on Tommy. And inside the home, the most telling piece of evidence of all, a British rifle, the same gun used to kill Connie. Warrants are issued for both men at this point, but they're on the run. Well, it goes into a manhunt. Warrants are out. They're looking for these men. But instead of a dramatic firefight or, police having you surrounded and you having to surrender. No, on the 14th day after Tommy's murder, James and Gary walk into the police station on their own accord. And they're there to talk to the police. And they walk in assuming that they can talk their way out of this whole situation. Until they hear the evidence stacked against them. And at that point, they are both charged with two counts of first-degree murder and arson. The investigators were able to piece together the sequence of events that took place that night. This all started February 21st, 1992, again. It was reported that there seemed to be tension between them, and police believe that this is more than likely due to drugs. A witness from the Howie's Hideaway had overheard them call Tommy a narc. And investigators think that is the main fuel of all of this. They believe that Tommy was speaking too openly about one of their family members' drug dealing. So after the fight at the bar, the men leave, and with Tommy getting arrested for public intoxication, Gary and James see an opportunity to go and light his trailer on fire. And then, when Tommy's family called them to pick him up and bring him home, instead, they took him to a secluded area and executed him. The next day, they come across Connie looking for Tommy and questioning people and seeming rather persistent, as she should be. James and Gary, seeing where this is leading, decide to silence her too. The bartender says that when she was in Howie's Hideaway, asking about Tommy and the night that he was there, James and Gary came up to her and offered to help them find her brother. And she leaves with them. And this is the last time that Connie Branham will ever be seen again. They took her to a secluded area, again, shot her point blank range in the head, and disposed of her in her vehicle. The trial began in February of 1993, and even without strong DNA evidence, the jury was convinced that James Dellinger and Gary Sutton were the ones responsible for these two murders. Both men were given the death penalty, being sentenced in 1996. Connie's daughters sat through this trial, which must have been very painful and traumatic for these girls. They were quite young. So they did get to hear justice about the death penalty being handled down. I hope that they did receive a feeling of justice served hearing those death sentences, knowing that they'll never be able to hurt anybody again, and they are being held responsible. They didn't get away with murder. A painful justice, if you will. And James Dellinger sat on death row up until 2023 when he died of natural causes. And in this time frame, Gary Sutton grew quite a support system fighting for his innocence, saying that there's nothing linking him to the murder other than the fact that he was known to do everything with James and do as James says. Among these supporters, he also had state representatives. A private investigator was hired, and their findings were that, again, nothing pointing to Gary himself. They also claimed that in one of the evidence pictures, there was a picture Two shotgun shells laying perfectly next to each other, and this is in Tommy's, one of Tommy's evidence photos, once they find his body. And even a state representative who loves to hunt says that it is impossible for two shells to lay side by side that perfectly parallel once they're ejected. Most of the evidence did point to James specifically, as well as accusations against the medical examiner, Dr. Charles Harlan, who they believe forged timelines to fit the prosecution's windows, and who eventually was disbarred for unethical practices, such as timeline fixing. And a new theory has developed. Connie and Tommy were actually supposed to be witnesses to another murder trial, and they say that the person who they were testifying against had been released that Tommy went missing. However, all of this new evidence and new theories doesn't win anybody over, considering he lied about who Tommy left with. He kept up the lie. They know Tommy was with them that night. They know they were the last to see him. And then Connie being last seen, spoken with them as well. It's too coincidental. So his conviction has never been overturned. As of October 1st, 2025, Derry Sutton has officially received a scheduled execution December 3rd, 2026, almost 35 years after the murders of Tommy and Connie. While supporters continue to argue Gary's defense, as of now, their motions are falling on deaf ears, and the families feel that they have the right men being held responsible as well. The Griffin family, a tight-knit family of what was once six siblings, was taken down to four because of James and Gary's actions. Two lives taken within 48 hours. Two girls now without a mother, and a holler that still remembers the fear and heartbreak from February of 1992. I don't like how this is going. It's like getting, actually, honestly, I'm really proud of myself because this might have to be taken in a little bit more. But if you like this, please share, like, follow, subscribe, get the word out. It'd be appreciated. Again, I'm Shelby with Hooks, Books, and Crime. And I'll catch you on the next one. Okay, bye.